Attention, attention, presenting His Eminence, our imperious leader.
And welcome back to Subject to Discussion. I'm Sean O'Mac, Sean Daly. You can call me anything you want, just do not call me late for dinner. And if it's Tuesday night in Las Vegas and LV rocks, it's Subject to Discussion time. It's 7 o'clock in Las Vegas, 8 o'clock if you're in a mountain time zone in Denver, 9 o'clock if you're in the central time zone in Chicago, or 10 o'clock if you're in the eastern time zone in New York City. And the program is also podcasted. Thank you very much for everybody who podcasts the program. And it's also archived over on SpankWagon.net. SpankWagon's on every Friday from 7 until 9 here on LVRocks.com, followed by King Hesh. And the website is SubjectToDiscussion.com, and email is Subject2Discussion. Wait a minute, I've got Alzheimer's. Subject2Discussion@LVRocks.com. There you go. Yeah, I'm pushing 40 here, so I'm the old timer here in LV Rocks. And tonight, after the news to me and the news to you, will be Michael J.W. Stickings of the reaction.blogspot.com, and also he's a part of the One America blog over at Senator John Edwards' website over there, and also the subject to discussion is part of the antiradio.net family of podcasts. Thank you very much for listing the podcast URL there. Thank you very much, guys. And then after Michael J.W. Stickings in the second hour will be Josh Hathaway from blogcritics.org. And then ending the second hour will be Koenig Rules with our Doctor Who, Battlestar Galactica, potpourri of reviews and news and reviews and news of review and everything else that's going on. So, and before you get to the news to me, looks like Marky Mark, breaking news here, Mark Wahlberg and his girlfriend had a baby, so I don't think he gave birth, but his girlfriend, she's very attractive. What's her name? Rhea Durham, very nice. She gave birth to a baby March 22nd there, so good for him. Now, that's a breaking news update here. And, of course, today I want to get into news that the riots continue in France over the youth are rioting, that the government's decided. Now, apparently in France, when you're when you're born, you go to college, they guarantee you a job for life. Well, anyway, the government's starting to realize that they can't continue like that, the socialist idea, so they're backing away from that. And anyway, the youths are rioting, and I showed them today on the news France riot police, which is supposed to be the second most strongest or feared riot police in the world, behind, I think they said, the Israel riot police. So that's pretty tough, and they're firing water cannons at these kids and everything. And also, we had the protest here in the United States, over in L.A. and also in the Phoenix and Dallas, over the immigration program that the Senate's starting to put through. Like I said, they have a Senate immigration reform, but how are we going to round up 12 million people and throw them out of the country? You can't really send the army into the streets of the United States. You know, I say make them all, everybody's here right now, legal. And then we steal off the border, and then can we dig a moat up? Because a lot of people say you can't build a fence, it'll look like the Berlin Wall. How we dig out all that area between the United States and Mexico and fill it with water, have a big moat, like a 500-foot moat or something like that. So I don't know, that might work. And so that's what I'm saying. Make them legal. That way they're in on the tax roll, paying taxes and everything. And then once we get everything fixed, the border and the legal immigration process, then we can start, if they come across, if they survive the swim across the water, then we can throw them back over. So, but other than that, and also today we had the White House Chief of Staff, Andy Card. He resigned. And Budget Director Josh Bolton will take his place. And they say it's the first of many resignations to come in the Bush administration, because many have been saying that he needs a shakeup in his administration, and no kidding, he needed that about 2 years ago. And also a year ago today, Terri Schiavo died, and her parents and her brother and her sister on Fox talking about her death, the anniversary of her death. They've come out with a book. And her husband, ex-husband, actually came out with a book as well. So they're dueling books about that. And former Secretary of Defense Caspar Weinberger passed away today as well. And also, this was breaking when I left, O'Reilly was talking about, the Duke University lacrosse team has been suspended, and they forfeited two games over allegations from an exotic dancer that she was gang raped. So, wow. And supposedly their lacrosse team is one of the best in the country, and apparently Duke puts a lot of credibility on their lacrosse team, so I guess not anymore. And then Monday we had on Fox's Hannity and Combs. They played an argument between Alec Baldwin and Sean Hannity. Baldwin called Hannity a no talent, and Hannity called Baldwin a third-rate actor. Unbelievable. Yeah, he was center square for a couple of years in Hollywood Squares. I don't know if that's third rate. I call that first rate in Hollywood Squares. You get in that center square, you're pretty big there, like Paul Lynn. Thousands marched in on Monday in San Diego and Los Angeles about illegal immigration again. And then we had this memo washed up, confirmed by the New York Times, says that the Bush administration planned the bombing in January 2003 for the March invasion. But Bush did not think that there would be an insurgency, and Bush has issues with his memory and competence. No, that's me. And you know, this is crazy. I mean, he said, "Oh, I didn't." I didn't say anything about, it's nuts, And then Sunday we had Laura Logan. She was a CBS News Baghdad correspondent. She was on Reliable Sources on CNN, saying that one of the reasons that the media cannot cover school openings in Baghdad in Iraq is that the military tells them that if they show the school opening, chances are the school will be attacked. And that the reporters can no longer drive out of Baghdad without military support or by military helicopter. So, yeah, that's the Bush administration saying things are improving in Baghdad. The press has got to be escorted by a military helicopter to get out of there. And then on, where are we at here? Saturday, more protests in L.A. about the immigration issue. It drew 500,000 into the streets of L.A., blocking off highways and everything else. The massive demonstration, by far the biggest of several around the nation in recent days, came as King George prodded Republican congressional leaders to give some illegal immigrants a chance to work legally in the U.S. under certain conditions. So, I mean, that's a big mess. It's going to brew up all week, I think. And then Friday, of course, we got the this past Friday, and then this Friday coming up, the Senate Judiciary Committee is going to hear the Senator Feingold's motion to censure King George. And also, it's Shooter Cheney. He spoke about the Democrats that want to cut and run, and it is what UBL protected would happen, subtly connecting UBL to Iraq. So, oh no, we're not connecting Iraq to 9/11. Oh, and then just Friday, oh yeah, UBL predicted we'd cut and run from Iraq. So they're subtly connecting the two together. And then Thursday, King George passed President Monroe with 1,889 days in office without using veto power, and is closing in on Thomas Jefferson, who won his full two terms without a single veto. Bush has signed every spending bill that hit his desk since he took office. FDR had the most vetoes, 635, over his nearly 13 years in office. President Grover Cleveland, the second most, with 584 vetoes. Vice President Cheney, according to the Smoking Gun, for his downtime requirements, like Diet Sprite and all TVs on and tuned to Fox News, private bathroom, and all lights turned on in his room, and a room temperature that's 68 degrees. Well, he's just very demanding. I know Barbara Streisand, when I worked over at New York, when she checked into MGM, she had requirements as well. I think she required like rose petals being in the toilet. And then I know the engineers used to complain because, she'd flush it. And after so many days, the damn plumbing started clogging up because all these rose petals are down in the plumbing. So, and I think it's also specific colors. And I know in the Grand Garden Arena, they had a carpet. She wanted the whole place carpeted. And the temperature had to be certain degrees throughout the arena, so very, very demanding. And then last Wednesday, we had the in Chile, we had that bus crash and it killed 12 American tourists. A bus carrying cruise ship tourists plunged 300 feet down the mountainside in northern Chile Wednesday, killing 12 Americans, U.S. and Chilean officials said. And then President Bush kept up his Iraq PR offensive, blaming the media for all the bad news. It's all the media's fault, right? And with that, we get on to the news to you, and first of all, this one came in. Actually, I had this picked up from, I went through a little digging of President Bush's quotes about the word parser in chief. More or less like the BS artist in chief here. Because, he's saying that, I never connected Saddam to 9/11. I never did. I never connected him to Al-Qaeda. Well, let's see. Condoleezza Rice said that Saddam Hussein, she said, no one has said that there is evidence that Saddam Hussein directed or controlled 9/11. But let's be very clear. He had ties to Al-Qaeda. All right, so there's here, Al-Qaeda, 9/11, Saddam. That's how they do it. They drop the words in together, Also, people, the attention spans here in the United States, like, Saddam's part of 9/11, he's part of Al-Qaeda. And then George Bush, the president, King George, says, we know that Iraq and Al-Qaeda have had high-level contacts that go back a decade. some Al-Qaeda leaders who fled Afghanistan went to Iraq. So there's Iraq, there's Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda, Afghanistan, and Iraq. So they're connecting all these things. And that was remarks made on Iraq, made in Cincinnati on October 7, 2002. And this is from a Washington press conference, November 7, 2002. Saddam Hussein is a threat because he is dealing with Al-Qaeda. Again, Saddam Hussein, Al-Qaeda. See, that's a connection right there. And this is from State of the Union Address, January 28, 2003. Evidence from intelligence sources, secret communications, and statements by people now in custody reveal that Saddam Hussein aids and protects terrorists, or Saddam Hussein and terrorists, including members of Al-Qaeda. So again, you got Saddam Hussein, terrorists, and Al-Qaeda. So they're, again, they're dropping these words in together, making a subtle connection between Saddam and Al-Qaeda and terrorism and 9/11. And this is also from the speech, World Can Rise to This Moment, on from February 6, 2003. Iraq has sent bomb-making and document forgery experts to work with Al-Qaeda. Iraq also has provided Al-Qaeda with chemical and biological weapons training. Again, Iraq, Al-Qaeda, chemical and biological weapons. All those words, I put them all together. And this one's from an announcement that major combat in Iraq was over for May 1st, 2003. The liberation of Iraq is a crucial advance in a campaign against terror. We removed an ally of Al-Qaeda. Again, Iraq, terror, Al-Qaeda. There's the, you know, connecting those words together. And this is from the same speech. The Battle of Iraq is one victory in a war on terror that began on September 11th, 2001. Again, Iraq, terror, September 11th. And this one is also the reason I keep insisting that there was a relationship between Iraq and Saddam and Al-Qaeda is because there was a relationship between Iraq and Al-Qaeda. So... Well, he puts a sentence together, I swear. And so what do we say to President Bush and his cabinet about their effort to link Saddam with Al-Qaeda? How about mission accomplished? So, I mean, he, you know, subtly, but he did make the connection. So they're full of it if they don't think the American people are starting to see through all this BS now. And also this is from today. Zacharias Massawi wanted to testify versus himself. See, this one I have a problem with. I don't know. I mean, he suddenly got on the stage, started chirping like a bird. So I don't know if he was, you know, they shot him with truth serum or what the hell. It says Al-Qaeda co-conspirator Zacharias Massawi offered last month to testify for prosecutors against himself at his death penalty trial and told agents that he did not want to die in prison, according to dramatic last-minute testimony. The bizarre testimony kept a trial that has been seen more in its share of the unusual over three tumultuous weeks, you know, including saying that he was going to pilot the fifth plane into the White House and all this stuff. So it's amazing what happened to him. And this is also from today: more internet, less TV ads, and shooter of mobility, the new cocktail. This is from the Pew Internet Study. 50 million people a day are getting their news online. More broadband users get their news online than from the local paper. Other interesting and important statistics in the piece include 78% of advertisers think TV is less effective now than it was 2 years ago, mainly due to the proliferation of digital video recorders that allows users blah blah to skip commercials. And more than 100 million people worldwide will be turning to paid or sponsored mobile broadcast video very soon. So I thought that was very interesting. And then we had this today from the Democrats are starting to get their act together. Democrats' national security plan leaked to the Raw Story. They'll be releasing their national security plan Wednesday afternoon. The plan, which has been in discussion for some time, was leaked early Tuesday. The Raw Story will print the document in full on Wednesday. The 10-page brochure, printed in both English and Spanish, outlines the party strategies with regards to securing the U.S. from terrorist attacks and restoring the U.S. position abroad. It's going to be broken down in five parts: the 21st century military, the war on terror, homeland security, Iraq, and energy independence. So, and they want to, part of their plan is for the energy independence, they want to plan on eliminating reliance on Middle East oil and exploring alternative energy sources. They say they intend to ensure independence from foreign oil by 2020. So, we'll see how that goes. So, I think they should take me more of a replica of the contract with America. But, and this is from Monday. This is a horrible story here. This is from former coach pleads guilty to raping and molesting boys. Redmond, Washington. A Redmond youth baseball coach pleaded guilty Thursday to molesting and raping boys on his team KRO Channel 7 Eyewitness News reported.
Holy cow!
And, yeah, I don't think he was scoring, but in a different way, I think.
You sick son of a bitch! You just missed your twisted bastard right
yeah,
in
the absolutely.
You son of a bitch!
Horrible. Prosecutor said that Chris Stefanik, 37, used his elaborate home to groom young boys for his sexual pleasure. He presented himself as a sort of teenage boy's best friend. His house,
you can just suck my balls.
His house was a fun palace for teenage boys. He has skating rinks. So how the hell can he afford this on a teacher's salary? He has skating rinks, computer set up, all interface with each other again. He had a ball course, in his backyard and alcohol available. These boys are very badly damaged, said Deputy King County Prosecutor Scott O'Toole. Stefanik also admitted to taking explicit photos of four boys, including one who was 6 or 7 years old. Wow. Prosecutors are recommending a sentence of 17 and a half years. What's the half come from? Authorities think there are more local victims, and they will file charges if other boys come forward. Disgusting.
Oh, I don't believe a word of that.
Disgusting. That's horrible. And this is also from today.
Just
and what's
do me a favor.
Who's that?
Step yourself outside. Do me a favor.
Is that Oprah?
Step yourself outside.
Uh-oh. That's Judge Judy. Hey, Judge Judy. she's a new addition to the program. Welcome, Judge Judy. Do we get Judge Wapner in here?
Medication, sir.
I need some medication,
take
I'm telling you.
Kind of medication.
And dozens attend meeting over puppy burned with acid. This is from Federal Way, Washington State. What's with that state? Police defended, maybe because it rains all the time there, I don't know. Police defended their response to the case of a puppy that appeared to have been burned with acid at a community meeting held Thursday in Federal Way. Dozens of people attended the meeting, which was held so citizens could meet with the police, blah, blah, blah. The four-month-old pit bull named Mui, was found severely burned and was taken to Dr. Ivy Engstrom and blah, blah, blah. The dog had died. The dog seemed to have burns all over her body, even in her mouth. The Federal Way police were called to the backyard where the dog was found and are investigating the case along with King County Animal Control. Disgusting, yeah. I hope they find whoever this bastard is and throw him away. You know, I'll throw some acid on him so he knows what the hell what the dog went through. You know, rescued. This is the story. I can't believe this one. Rescued Oregon couple disappears again. This is this damn couple that they tracked down to some mountain, snowed in road, wherever the hell it was, and they take off again. They can't find him again now. If not for their wrong turn, If not in the wrong turn in the mountains of southern Oregon. My airplane's taking off. Is that a DC-10? There you go. Oh, they're taking off. I get it. And if not for the wrong turn to mountains of southern Oregon, the case of Albert and Becky Hungingbottom, they should be running away with a last name like that, might well have lingered in an in-basket of the cash-strapped police office of the sheriff of Navajo County, Arizona. 11 months ago, they've been caught with a small amount of methamphetamines and a shotgun, deputy said. But they agreed to cooperate with investigators. Then they disappeared. And then they turned up in a big way last Tuesday. And then all of a sudden, they took off again. Now they're looking. The Hickenbottoms were reported Monday by relatives to be heading back to Navajo County on their own in the same motor home that they had been retrieved from the mountains. So they so now they take off. The same mobile home that got lost up in the snowy roads in Oregon. They brought it down to them and they got rescued. Now they took off in the damn thing again. So,
where were you last night?
Amazing. And this is also from Time Magazine this week.
Hoo-ah!
There you go. Republicans on the run. As the campaign season kicks into gear, Republican incumbents are having a hard time figuring out how close they want to be to the White House. None. I want to stay as far away from that place as possible. You got to bring Gerlach around
answer
there.
Me.
And voters have plenty to take out on Republican candidates this year. Ethics scandals, the GOP's failure to curb spending, the government's inept response to Hurricane Katrina, and a confusing new prescription program for seniors, and more than anything else, an unpopular president. President Bush. We resigned from office, who is fighting an unpopular war. Iraq can make a vulnerability of the Republicans. Greatest asset, the security issue.
What a big man you are! Hey, let me buy you a pack of gum. I'll show you how to chew it.
Ooh. Yeah, so vulnerability for the Republicans could be Iraq, the security issue. They could be taking the security issue away from them because they said a poll, was it last week or 2 weeks ago, said the American people trust the Democrats more with national security than the Republicans. So they got a big mess. And in a Time poll conducted last week, Bush's job approval rating was mired at 39%.
What are you going to do about it, asshole?
Yeah. 3 in 5 Americans said that the country is headed in the wrong direction. When those surveyed were given the choice between a generic Republican and a generic Democrat, the nameless Democrat won 50-41%. So they're expecting that it's going to be, they say because of the way the districts were gerrymandered, the Republicans won't lose too many seats, but they'll lose a handful probably in both houses of Congress, and as a build-up to 2008. So, and it's also from New York, Scarlett Johansson voted sexiest woman in the world. I'd say so. Scarlett, but next to Katie Sackhoff, of course. Scarlett Johansson tops a lovely list of 100 sexiest women in the world in a poll of readers by FHM magazine. The 21-year-old actress, that's all she is, wow, star of Match Point and Lost in Translation, so it's a huge compliment. Angelina Jolie is number 2, followed by Jessica Alba, Jessica Simpson, Keira Knightley, Halle Berry, Jenny McCarthy, I didn't know she was still around, Maria Sharapova, Carmen Electra, and Terry Hatcher. So, amazing. I'll take Scarlett Johansson any day. Time to talk war crimes. This is from Robert Perry of the Consortium News on Monday. The latest evidence of their war crimes was revealed in secret British minutes of an Oval Office meeting on January 31st, 2003, when Bush, Blair, and their top aides chillingly discussed their determination to invade Iraq.
I'm trying to put something really big together out here. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Huh? You know. If you're acting like this now, how can I...
That's my cousin Vinny. He's 2 Utes. Though still hoping to provoke the Iraqis into some violent act that would serve as a political cover. Also, I saw, was at CNN, they had the former Secretary of Defense Cohen right after the recount in 2000 with the whole Bush-Gore fiasco when they stole that election from Al Gore. As soon as the election was decided, Cheney got a hold of Cohen, who was still the defense secretary for Clinton, and he said, he said, forget about the rest of the countries in the world. I want the security briefing on Iraq. So they said that. So Cheney was going after Iraq before he even got in office. So, and talking about war crimes, Bush, who has publicly told Americans that it was Saddam Hussein who chose the war by refusing to disarm, was in reality set on invading Iraq regardless of Hussein's cooperation with the United Nations weapons inspectors, according to a five-page memo described in detail by the New York Times. In the same Oval Office meeting, Bush cavalierly dismissed the concerns that the U.S. conquest might not go as smoothly as he expected. Unbelievable. The president predicted it was unlikely there would be internecine warfare between the different religious and ethnic groups. Although his father and the others also said if you go into Iraq, into Baghdad, it'll start a civil war. Even his father even said, according to the British minutes written by David Manning, Bush's judgment would prove tragically wrong, as more than 2,300 U.S. troops have died, along with tens of thousands of Iraqis, possibly more than 100,000, in 3 years of invasion, occupation, and now sectarian violence. And this also continues by the conniving Bush. The memo also reveals Bush as conniving.
He's got something. I don't know what it is.
They should cast him as JR in a new Dallas movie. He's this slick. It's conniving to deceive the American people and the world community. At the meeting, Bush floated ideas on how to rally UN support for the invasion by engineering a provocation that would portray Hussein as the aggressor.
They tell you lies.
There you go. Bush suggested painting a U.S. plane up in UN colors and flying it over Iraq with the goal of drawing Iraqi fire, the minutes said. Amazing. He was just hell-bent on going to war with Iraq, wasn't he? Another explanation for going to war in Iraq. This is Sunday. The story and reasons keeps changing. It's like every week, this story, this reason. More than 3 years after invading Iraq, the Bush administration's rationale continues to evolve. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice told NBC's Meet the Press, or Meet the Depressed, I guess it should be, on March 26th that while Saddam Hussein wasn't involved in the 9/11 attacks, he had to be removed because he was part of the old Middle East that generated the hatred that inspired the 9/11 attacks. She says, quote, if you really believe that the only thing that happened on 9/11 was people flew airplanes into buildings, I think of a very narrow view of what we faced on 9/11. We faced the outcome of an ideology of hatred throughout the Middle East that had to be dealt with. Saddam was part of that old Middle East the new Iraq will be part of the new Middle East. It'll be all, and we will all be safer. Again, they said, who all said that? Dude, you go into Iraq, you'll create 100 UBLs. You know, I mean, study after study saying that area part of the world is less safe than it was before he went in. And Hussein was feared, and he kept those segments of his society in check. You know, granted, he's a butcher and everything. I don't know if they could divide the country three ways or what, but I said it was a mess. I don't know why we couldn't go in with overwhelming force like Powell did with the Desert Storm. You know, take care of UBL first in Afghanistan and then go into Iraq, build the case for Iraq, and overwhelm them with force. But, you know, oh, well.
You're about to go to jail and all your little friends.
Absolutely. President's upset. Oh, no, 40 killed in bombing on U.S. Iraqi base. This is on Monday. A suicide bomber attacked a joint U.S. Iraqi military base in northern Iraq, killing at least 15 people, wounding as many as 30. The attack was reported shortly after noon in an Iraqi army recruiting center in the front of the base, which is about 18 miles east of Tal Afar, the ancient city that President Bush singled out in a recent speech as a success story for American and Iraqi forces in the drive to quell the insurgency. So that's a success. I got a bridge in New York I like to sell them. Parents upset after boy found wandering around Denver, Colorado. A local couple is upset after their 10-year-old son flew as an unaccompanied minor on a Delta Airlines flight, and he was left stranded at the airport. They hoped that Tom Hanks would be there, you know. The boy's parents thought an airline worker would be watching him. The father said, "I went up to the gate and found him wandering around the terminal. The Farnsworths pay an extra fee for having an employee escort their son on his flight from Salt Lake City to Denver. But when his father came to the airport, Brian was wandering around the C concourse." Well, at least it wasn't the A concourse. That's the international flights, but, you know. I mean, well, how come one of the parents didn't fly with the son to begin with? Let a 10-year-old son fly alone? I don't know. Especially in these days and age, you know, you got to send a parent with the kid. I mean, the airline can't watch everybody on the plane. This is from Saturday. Illinois man fined for piggybacking on Wi-Fi service. In Illinois, riding piggyback on someone else's Wi-Fi could cost you some money. This guy, David Kochak, 32, pleaded guilty this week in Winnebago County to remotely accessing someone else's computer system without permission. And a county judge fined Kochak $250 and sentenced him to 1 year of court supervision. That's getting more and more serious, because I know it. In the hotel this week, we had some guests, because we don't have Wi-Fi at the hotel I work at. And they said, "Oh, we're picking up Wi-Fi." I go, "Well, somebody else's." And they're, "Oh, we'll just pick it up from them then." Well, hello, it's somebody else's service that they're paying for, and you're going to try and steal some of the signal away? I don't know. And this next one is about the Senate hearing set on a move to censure Bush. The Republican-led U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee announced on Friday it would hold a hearing next week, this week, Friday, on a call by a Senate lawmaker to censure President George W. Bush for his domestic spy program. In a one-sentence notice, the panel said the hearing would be held next Friday by the order of its chairman, Republican Senator Arlen Specter. Russ Feingold of Wisconsin introduced a resolution last week calling for a Senate censure of the president, charging that Bush's warrantless domestic surveillance program is illegal. Revelation of the once secret program has triggered a political uproar. So I hope at least they air out all the evidence. And, you know, the Republicans won't let that out of the committee, but at least they'll give some, you know, air out the censure and maybe humiliate him enough where he'll, you know, ratchet down his BS, you know. Department of Justice, NSA could have monitored lawyers' calls. This is from Saturday. The NSA could have legally monitored ordinary confidential communications between doctors and patients or attorneys and their clients, the Justice Department said Friday, of its controversial warrantless surveillance program. Responding to questions from Congress, the department also said it sees no prohibition to using information collected under the NSA's program in court. Like I said, he's the Bush administration. They could do anything they damn well please. They want to come in here and tap the phones here, they'll do it. You know? And of course, if it was reversed, they'd be screaming holy hell about it. Oh, no. If it was the Democrats, if it was Clinton doing it, oh, they'd be dragging him out of the White House and then throwing rocks at him as they're dragging him out. They'd be stoning him. And then it's also from the Independent in London on Saturday that the battle for Baghdad has already started. So much for this BS that there's no civil war. The battle between Sunni and Shia Muslims for control of Baghdad has already started. And the fighting will only stop when a new balance of power has emerged. Many Iraqi leaders now believe that civil war is inevitable, and it will be confined, at least at first, to the capital and surrounding provinces where the population is mixed. So, I mean, the real battle for Baghdad, where the Shi'i have increasing control, that's where the real battle is going to be. And they're already fighting over there, blowing up cars and everything today. So, but I think our guest is on the line. We'll bring him on. Got Michael J.W. Stickings, you there, sir?
Hey, Sean, how are you?
Oh, thank you. Thank you for being on the program.
No problem. Great to be back.
Welcome back, and congratulations on being a part of the Mark. I got Mark Edwards on the brain. I got John Edwards. We got Mark Edwards, the local talk show host in Vegas. I was listening when I was coming in. John Edwards, Senator Edwards, is One America blog, correct?
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate it. Edwards has set up an interesting online community, the One America community. Mm-hmm. The One America Committee, sorry. Certainly, if your listeners want to check it out, it's just oneamericacommittee.com. Mm-hmm. And there's a blog where Senator Edwards posts occasionally, and there are a few of us featured bloggers now. And it's great to be there. I don't necessarily endorse Senator Edwards.
No.
I want to make that clear. But it's great to be part of that community. There's some great people there. And
I read that on your blog, which is the reaction, the-reaction.blogspot.com, and then I signed up myself. It's an excellent blog there. Pretty much they have a lot of open threads. You can pretty much spout off whatever you want. So
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, I mean, I really it's come a long way. I'm actually celebrating the 1-year anniversary. I think it's today or tomorrow. I can't remember the day.
Wow.
But I think back to a year ago when I had no idea what blogging was all about, and it's become quite a journey. And I'm certainly not where I thought I would be at this point, but
yeah.
It's fantastic. So, I mean, anyone who wants to come by and leave comments or read what I have to say, and I have some new contributors who write some great stuff, too. So
yes, excellent.
Thank you. Now,
what about this? I don't know if you're on top of this Memo-gate part two that we're delving into now. Chris Matthews and Oberman blew wide open last night. Do you get MSNBC in Canada?
We do get MSNBC.
Yeah.
I do check it out. We even get Fox up here.
Oh.
I can't imagine many Canadians are watching Fox, but who knows?
Yeah.
Can I just mention something?
Yes.
Just before we get started. A friend of mine, Steve Bennon, who writes a great blog called The Carpetbagger Report, sent me an email this afternoon with a transcript from McClellan's press conference earlier today.
Mm.
And he got the name of the Canadian Prime Minister wrong.
Uh-oh.
Instead of Prime Minister Harper, he said Prime Minister Martin, and he said this twice.
Mm.
And it's particularly embarrassing for us Canadians.
Yeah. Well, you mean at the White House? It was McClellan said it, right?
McClellan said it, yeah. I mean, it's not Bush, but it's nonetheless
close
embarrassing
enough.
When we... It's obvious that no one's paying attention to us. So.
I'm telling you, that administration is asleep at the wheel. I don't know what news they're watching. I swear they're watching Sesame Street all the time on PBS or something. I don't know what they're doing.
They're watching Fox, aren't they?
They're watching Fox. Yeah, I mean, I can't understand it. And yet, and then they have the new memo gate that blew up last night.
Yeah.
Back in January of 2003, when Blair visited the White House. They Bush wanted to paint an American plane in the UN colors and hope that Saddam would shoot it down or fire at it.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, and he had no plans for after he bought into that thing that Cheney said, oh, they'll throw roses at her feet and all that. He had made no plans for he made plans to fight the war, but he had to keep the peace after the war.
Well, I mean, this is defenders of the Iraq War have been. Distancing themselves throughout from any kind of comparison to Vietnam, but I mean, this is exactly like Vietnam now. We all remember that. Well, I wasn't around at the time, but the Gulf of Tonkin incident.
Yes.
I mean, LBJ essentially manufactured an incident to justify going to war,
mm-hmm.
and it's quite clear that at least President Bush was contemplating that sort of scenario, and I think it's
shameful.
It really is shameless. And for someone like me, I don't know where you were at the beginning of the war, but I was, and I'm hesitant to say this now in public, but I actually supported the war when it started.
Hmm. Well,
because,
you believed all
believed
the.
It. I
well,
believed
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you believed all the BS.
Yeah. I did. Yeah, in retrospect, I believed bullshit. Basically, I believed whatever was being spoon fed to me at the time. I thought, well, of course they have weapons of mass destruction,
mm-hmm.
and that's bad.
Well, especially when you see Colin Powell, who's respected around the world, sit up there at the UN with the you know, whatever it is, the little vial, and he says, "This is anthrax," or whatever it was he was holding up. And, you know, if you don't believe Colin Powell, who are you going to believe? You know what I'm saying?
Well, it's Colin Powell. it's someone like Tony Blair, who I think made an extremely good case for humanitarian intervention. I mean, this was a brutal dictator who had gassed his own people, who had invaded a neighboring country, who was essentially threatening the entire region. It seemed to make sense to me that taking him out was a legitimate option. But now, in retrospect, to see that, in fact, the case was being consciously manufactured, that the intelligence was being, if not manipulated, at least sort of, it was all sort of a nice cut-and-paste job, right? I mean, it's whatever they wanted to hear.
Well, especially with that business, I don't know if you rewatching Hardball, what was it, yesterday or the day before, Matthews said about Cohen. I guess he had permission from Cohen to reveal this conversation he had with Cheney. I guess as soon as the 2000, stealing the election from Gore was decided, Cheney got on the phone with Cohen. He goes, "I don't care about the rest of the countries in the world. I want all your information, intelligence on Iraq."
Yeah.
So they're building the case even before they're even sworn in to go after Iraq.
Well, I mean, this goes back to Bill Kristol's project for the New American Century as well. I mean, these are neoconservatives who wanted to finish the job, who in many ways believe very noble things. I mean, I don't disagree with the spread of democracy. How could you? You know, I don't disagree that I would love to see more of the world embrace the American values that I hold dear. You know, I don't think any of us wants to see what was going on in Iraq under Saddam, for example. But their solution, namely preemptive strikes, and invasion, I mean, this was all being planned in sort of neoconservative salons and back rooms a long, long time ago, long before Bush ever came to power.
Yeah.
And it was just with Bush, a president susceptible to manipulation, shall we say, and, of course, a post 9/11 environment, a culture of fear, a willingness among the American people to believe whatever their president was telling them. You know, all of this contributed to a war that, let's face it, has become a quagmire, and that isn't getting any better.
No.
I mean, I heard what you just said. It is a civil war.
Yeah, it's been a civil war for at least 2 years.
I mean, you don't have to have the two sides facing off at Gettysburg. I mean, that's not always how a civil war works.
Yeah. I mean,
you have a small segment of the population, but a very powerful one, which is essentially trying to disrupt the society, which is essentially waging guerrilla warfare against the authorities.
Yeah, well,
that is a civil war.
Yeah, and they're finding bodies all over Baghdad, you know, beheaded and everything else every day, and then they had that thing yesterday. Supposedly, they're saying now that it wasn't the Americans, it was the Iraqi troops went into some shrine, and they're all up in arms over that. It's just on and on and on. I mean, I keep saying the solution, I think, you know, because we're there, we got to be there until the country calms down. The Murtha plan with the tweak, pull the troops out to the border and, you know, let the Iraqis slug it out, you know, in the country, in the interior of the country. Let them slug it out, and we just guard the borders and guard those oil fields. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to continue to provide security of some sort. I think we need to provide whatever security seems right to protect the government as it is right now. I mean, we certainly don't want that country descending into chaos.
No.
I think we do have that. It's that pottery barn thing, right? I mean, we do have
we broke it.
Some
we bought
responsibility
it.
To stay in there to some degree. But, you know, certainly standing there in the middle of this civil war isn't doing the U.S. any good.
No. And having our troops hiding in their barracks, you know, it's not the United States. You know, we can make an explanation by pulling the troops out. We're going to let the Iraqis slug it out. We'll just go out to the borders and protect the borders.
But it's a shame. You know what I was thinking? This was my first post at the One America Committee last week. And I was thinking about just, I mean, we talk about this in partisan terms, and we talk about, you know, 40 new bodies found in Iraq, or so many new, you know, more American soldiers killed. I just think the whole situation is sad. I mean, I know that's not, you know, deep analysis, but I mean, it is.
Yeah.
I mean, we you know, the U.S. goes in there to take down a tyrant and the occupation, the reconstruction is so badly botched. Mm-hmm. What kind of a country have we left to the poor Iraqis?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, what did they do to deserve this?
No. It's like you're saying, as bad as Saddam was, the country actually, for the most part, I mean, generally, was better off with him in charge, because all the difference as the Shiites and everything else, he kept them all, split. You know?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a somewhat debatable point.
Yeah.
I mean, he was an awfully brutal dictator.
Yeah.
But, I mean, again, you know, for the U.S. to go in claiming such noble intentions,
mm-hmm.
Talking with our president, your president, talking about the spread of democracy and regime change, mm-hmm. and then to leave it in such bad shape,
I
think is sad. And I feel, you know, I feel, what can I say? I feel badly for the Iraqi people. I mean, at some point the U.S. will withdraw. The violence will only get worse.
Mm-hmm.
Anarchy may set in. How many civilians have died? How many civilians are injured? How many families have been destroyed?
Yeah.
How many children have been killed?
Yeah.
It's just such an awful situation.
Yeah. Well, it's the body toll and also the psychological toll. I mean, that country lives in, you know, constant, you know, bombings and, you know, roadside. They drive along. You come out of your house in Baghdad, you don't know how many bodies you're going to drive across, you know, drive by and away with the heads beheaded and everything. It's madness.
It is madness. And I assume that, you know, if you're a regular Iraqi, I mean, every day you go out, you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And, I mean, what kind of a, you know, how can you possibly construct any sort of civil society in that kind of environment? And I just don't see, you know, how that can possibly happen.
Yeah.
And again, I think this goes back to, you know, yes, there was manipulated intelligence. Yes, there are these memos coming out. But where I think our attention needs to be is on, again, just how badly managed this war has been from the very beginning.
Yeah, it's a mess. And then, you know, there's Bush even said he's going to be there, the troops will be there until after he leaves office. You know, and they're building these, supposedly we're not going to have, according to the administration, we're not building permanent bases, but you hear all these stories about bases being built.
Well, sure. And I mean, his legacy will be, hey, look what I did. I started the drive towards democracy in Iraq, and the hard decisions will be shuffled off to his successor or his successor's successor.
Yeah.
I mean, it could end up being a John McCain who ends up making the tough decision.
Yeah.
It could be a President Hillary Clinton. It could be a president. Who knows?
Yeah.
But someone else is going to have to make the tough decisions because Bush blew it.
Yeah. Right? The clean up his mess. You know what I mean? And then they got Afghanistan starting to blow up too. I mean, he's got some problems on his plate. You know?
Well, and the problem over there, of course, is that you have Canadians on the front lines, and that's certainly something that we haven't been used to.
No.
Our casualties certainly don't number quite as high as American casualties in Iraq, but you know, when you open up Canadian papers and you see, you know, one dead or two dead, and you know, we don't have a large military to begin with. It's tough. It's certainly tough.
Well, especially a war where I'm guessing the majority of the people in Canada don't agree with either.
Well, I think Canadians did originally support the war in Afghanistan. They certainly didn't support the war in Iraq, and former Prime Minister Chrétien skillfully kept us out of it when there was some pressure to support Bush.
Yeah.
But, you know, I certainly Canadians don't approve of the way Bush has handled Afghanistan. Yeah.
Now, one of the things you want to talk about was, of course, Andy Card resigned today from the White House Chief of Staff, so he's gone. Josh Bolton's taking his place. He's the budget director.
That's right. I was hoping it was John Bolton, but I think that would have been fantastic if the other Bolton had gone in. can you imagine?
He's like a bull in the china shop there. Him and Roe would clash in 2 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's Josh Bolton. Yeah.
And then Russ Feingold. Now, I missed him. He was on Jon Stewart, you said. And how'd that go?
He was fantastic. You know, of course, he's sort of one of these guys who has nothing to lose. He's probably eyeing 08, and I think he's, you know, if Gore doesn't run, I think Feingold is probably the only left-wing Democrat who can challenge Warner and Clinton for the nomination. And I heard what you said before I came on. I'm with you. I hope that I wish that more Democrats would come out in favor of censure.
Yeah.
I think Feingold I mean, I understand he was doing this in some ways for partisan reasons and for self-interested reasons, but the fact is, when most Democrats are willing to fold like lawn chairs, you know, Feingold at least takes a stance, and I have the utmost respect for him.
Yeah, well, the hearing Friday should be amazing. I'm surprised that Spector's even let it. Well, I guess they had to let go. Either they sent it to the committee, or I guess Feingold could have done some kind of procedural maneuver and brought the measure to the floor itself. I guess they figured it's a lesser of two evils. Let them air it in committee, and I'm sure something's going to happen Friday. It's going to knock that off the TVs and everything else. So I almost guarantee something's going to happen, huh?
Well, I mean, look. I mean, this goes back to what we were just talking about, which is the Andy Card resignation. I mean, if there's one thing about this White House, they may not do policy very well, but they do communications very well. And it's really no accident that Bush first started dropping hints of a senior staff member leaving as early as last week. This is fodder for the inside the Beltway crowd. You know, the Washington press that just eats this stuff up.
Yeah, it takes.
They love talking personnel moves. They love talking White House politics.
Yeah,
the fact is, Card had been in longer than any other chief of staff, with the exception of Eisenhower's chief of staff.
Exactly.
Sherman Adams, I think his name was, and it was time for him to leave. But nothing is going to change. You see, there's no story here.
Right.
There's no substance here. This is simply an attempt, a sort of cynical attempt by the White House to change the story.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right; it wouldn't surprise me if something else happened later in the week.
I wouldn't be surprised if they time it. Who else could resign from the? Somebody else. Maybe Rumsfeld could resign, or who knows? Somebody else. In the staff of the White House could resign on Friday. That will knock Feingold's motion off the headlines, off the TV.
Yeah. Someone other, prominent Republican. I mean, there's been talk of Fred Thompson or Mark Rassico, or someone else might get in the news, or some shifting around. And as Chuck Schumer said today, I mean, it's the old line about shifting the deck chairs on the Titanic.
Exactly.
That is essentially what's happening, and yet it's amazing to me how gullible the mainstream press is.
Well,
they just buy into this.
It's amazing. I used to watch O'Reilly all the time, and he's really, I don't know what's going on with him. He's lost me. But Matthews, at least with Harbaugh, is sticking on the stuff that matters. He's on the memos. He's sticking to that. Every once he gives us an update about the Plame thing. We seem to all forget about the Valerie Plame scandal. He's staying on these stories. I think the administration, they get pulled off into the BS over now. About Moussaoui wanting to pilot that fifth plane into the White House, all this stuff,
You're absolutely right. I'm not as huge a fan of Chris Matthews as you might be, but I mean, I think it's important to keep these stories out there and not to let. This is how Republicans win. See, this is what they do. They manipulate the news. They manipulate the narrative. They tell you what the news is. And they so easily change the story around, right? I mean, even Feingold's censure. I mean, it wasn't really about they weren't able to debate censure on the merits, because that would mean dealing with Bush's illegal program.
Yeah.
Right. What they did was they started conflating censure with impeachment. If you're in favor of censure, you're in favor of impeachment. Well, that's not the case. The two are different.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Don't do that. Don't start moving in the direction. Don't start talking about impeachment and labeling all Democrats as left-wing extremists.
Exactly. And then I understand they're swift voting Feingold in Wisconsin too. The ads are starting to swift vote them.
They are swift voting, and I want to read something to you, which I jotted down before I came on. This is John Stewart showed this when Feingold was on, but Boehner, the new House Majority Leader.
Oh yes, I mean the man that was handing out checks on the House floor for the tobacco industry, wasn't he? He the one?
He may have been.
I do believe.
It surprised me. Let's just say.
Yes.
He came out and said this of Feingold. Sometimes you have to wonder if he's more interested in the safety and security of the terrorists as opposed to the American people.
Yeah, that's
shameless.
Yeah.
a shameless slur in post 9/11 America.
Yeah,
I mean, well, that is just shameless.
That's home. Yeah, it's you know, an ad hominem attack. I mean, you know, and then who's the other one is spouted off not so long about some? Oh, Santorum. He's not about Feingold, but he went off about something. I mean, it's just like they go over the edge with some of this rhetoric that they use. Hoping they'll, yeah, they say they it's like red meat to the right. They throw the red meat out there. They'll chew it up like Limbaugh and some of the others. You know.
Look, they don't just do this to Democrats. They mm-hmm. did this to McCain in 2000.
Oh yeah.
The racism that the Bush administration, the Bush campaign then used in South Carolina, for example, to discredit McCain.
Yeah.
Among, again, the most right wing, the most backwards of white voters.
Mm.
You know, they did this to Kerry, a decorated Vietnam War hero.
Mm-hmm.
They did this to Murtha.
Yeah.
A war hero.
Yeah, they don't care. You know what? And that big that broke was yesterday. I think it was on Countdown. Oberman had a story about apparently one of the leaders of the Swift Boat movement. Apparently, he's been accused of plagiarizing. Something in either an article or a book or something. So now stuff's starting to come out. This guy's not as pristine as we were all led to believe. You know.
Well, I never really thought he was all that pristine, but it certainly doesn't surprise me. I mean, this was just a hatchet job from the very beginning, and then. Mm-hmm. I mean, no credibility at all. I hesitate to use this word, but I mean, you know, chicken hawk. I mean, these are guys, many of them, who haven't been to war themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that doesn't mean that they shouldn't be permitted to discuss war, but to discredit the character of people like Kerry and Murtha, again, is simply despicable.
Yeah, well, especially,
it really is. I mean, what kind of a state of political discourse do you have when that is going on?
Yeah. Well, I mean, especially they're part of a party that, you know, has completely botched this war in Iraq, and we're going to run the country, we're going to run the world now. It's all one party, and they've driven the country into a ditch. You know, it's ridiculous. And also, when we get a few minutes left, you want to mention about Catherine Harris? she was on. Where was it that she's going to take out what $10 million of money she inherited and plowed in her own campaign?
Yeah, that's what she claimed.
Yeah, and they say
that's what she told Sean Hannity last week.
And they say that's BS. She's just shuffling the deck. She's selling some stock, or, you know, she's not really taking her inheritance. She's, you know, shuffling the deck on her investments. They say she's hopeless. She can't win that election.
No, I don't think she can. I mean, Bill Nelson, the incumbent Democratic senator, is beatable.
Mm-hmm.
Florida is one of those states that can always go either way.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, Catherine Harris is probably the worst candidate the Republicans could have put up there. And as her campaign has gotten more and more desperate, she's actually turned to a spiritual advisor who is connected to Dobson and Bauer and Falwell. And some of her top advisors have left the campaign, people like Ed Rollins, who has a long history in the Republican Party, because they just see this as a sinking ship. And some of her former staff members have claimed that she's leading a Christian crusade. It's sort of bizarre, and I think, you know, it's one of those stories that's sort of worth following just for its bizarro factor.
Yeah, I mean, I understand it. I mean, she's hopeless, and then now the I don't know if you're following the Senate race in New York. Apparently, that woman that was part of the Reagan administration, she's running against Hillary.
Yeah, Pirro, I think.
No, not Pirro. Pirro dropped out. I guess somebody
Pirro
else now.
Dropped out, right? Okay.
Somebody else is running. I guess her campaign is floundering now too. I mean, it's amazing. Especially Catherine Harris, she was like the darling of the GOP after, you know, they handed the election to Bush. You know.
Well, this is the interesting thing, right? She is still the darling of the grassroots Republicans in Florida.
Uh-huh.
I mean, everyone knows that what she did in 2000,
mm-hmm.
and the grassroots, you know, the people on the ground, the you know, the base, they love her. They think she's great because, again, they know what she did.
Yeah.
It's the Republican establishment that's embarrassed by her and knows that, you know, she's simply a losing candidate.
Huh.
So. Now, we'll see how it goes, but I mean, obviously, it's quite, you know, it's good for us, right? I mean, a Nelson victory would be fantastic.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, what do you think of these, you know, the riots in Paris, and we got the protests here in the United States? What do you think of all this? Think it's signs of things to come here in the world that the youth and you know, all the immigrants are going to go up for grabs?
Well, I mean, we only have a couple of minutes. Let me just, if I can get this in here. I have a post coming out at the One America Committee tomorrow on immigration, looking at different alternatives to deal with the quote-unquote illegal or undocumented immigration.
Mm.
And I hope your listeners check it out. But, you know, I stand with those 500,000. I admire them. Mm. That doesn't mean that there shouldn't be some kind of solution to a growing problem of illegal immigration in the United States. Mm. But I think these sort of extreme measures that have been pushed through the House and that are now being supported by Senator Frist, which would essentially criminalize illegal immigrants, criminalize any attempt to help them, and would build a wall along the American border to Mexico, is draconian, mm-hmm. is un-American, and is just simply hateful and vengeful.
It's like the Berlin Wall. I mean, my solution, if you listen to a program, is you dig out, you put water there or something, so it's a barrier, but not a wall. Yeah, you could do different things. I don't know, but a wall. It's insane. And Frist is running for president. He everybody knows, can see through him. He's a phony. He's like phony as a $3 bill. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, and he's going for the Tancredo vote, the far right vote, the anti-immigration and anti-immigrant vote. But thankfully, I think this is a case where even President Bush has a fairly moderate plan to deal with. Now, I don't necessarily support his guest worker plan, but at least it's sensible. And there are bipartisan efforts. Kennedy and McCain are sponsoring a bill together. Senator Spector has a bill that would allow for an easier transition to citizenship for illegal immigrants. And so on immigration, although I think it could be a divisive issue this year, I think there is at least some hope that a bipartisan effort could be pushed through. And I think we would all like to see that.
Exactly. As I say, you can't expect the United States Army to go into the streets of our country and throw out 12 million people. I mean, that's just ridiculous,
That's exactly right. And then let's face it, I mean, there are always exceptions, but many of them are good, decent, mm-hmm. working people who work jobs that, many of us really would not want to work.
Yeah.
And I think they contribute immensely to American society.
Exactly.
They have families, they have children, and I think we need to be generous, fair, flexible with them, and find some solution to this.
Yeah, it's our government's policies that let these people come in and stay here all these years. We should say, okay, here on out, we're gonna strengthen those borders.
Yeah.
Put troops there, or build the moat, or whatever it is. And but the 12 million are here. We're gonna make them legal because we can't spend the army into the streets. The money it's gonna cost to do all this is ridiculous. And then from a certain point on, once the walls the borders reinforced, then if you come over, we're gonna send you back to Mexico.
That's right. I think that's a very sensible idea.
Yeah.
And I think thankfully, there are good, solid leaders on both sides of the aisle who are at least tempting to arrive at that sort of solution.
Yeah. Well, you know what? On my blog, somebody was railing against me, and they called me, I'm a leader of the liberal media. So I didn't know I was a leader of the liberal media.
Well, I'm proud to be on your show. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, so he was, how dare I attack Bush in wartime and yada, yada, and you're the leader of the liberal attack dogs. I'm like, well, hey, I didn't know I was a leader. But anyway, Michael, we'll let you go at the end of our first hour.
Great, no problem.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for having me on. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. I'll have you on in a couple weeks.
Anytime, you know that.
All right, thank you very much, sir.
Yeah, take it easy. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Bye.
And that was Michael J.W. Stickings of The Reaction, the-reaction.blogspot.com, and also for the One America blog over at John Edwards. There you go, I got it right. Senator John Edwards' website, and he's doing a good job over there with that. The guest blogging and his own blog is first class all the way, I'd say. And in the second hour will be Josh Hathaway of blogcritics.org with our pop culture discussion. And don't forget, at the end of the second hour, it'll be Koenig Rules with our Doctor Who and Battlestar Galactica news and review and update. And we'll be back in just a couple minutes. Stay tuned.
Just come.
Attention, attention. See that the humans remain entertained until the end.
Thank you, Centurion. That's the Centurion Charge Consoler. Thank you very much.
And by your command.
Yeah, thank you. This is the second hour of Subject to Discussion live on LVRocks.com and also podcasted. Thank you, everybody, for podcasting the program, and thank you, everybody, for listening. And also thanks to antiradio.net for listing the podcast feed. And before we bring on Josh Hathaway, I want to mention this post on my blog here. Albert said this. He's Albert from Texas, so, you know, it figures. He says, "You're a dumbass." That's me. He's talking about, "You're a dumbass. Your attacks on Bush are out of line. You should not be doing that while our troops are in harm's way in Iraq." It's hard not to be in harm's way in Iraq. I mean, what was that? Casey said that he sees bustling in the streets when there's actually people running for their lives in Baghdad. He said, Albert also continues, "You lead that pack of off-their-rocker liberals who should move to Russia and live there with the rest of the commies." So with that... we'll bring on Josh Hathaway with blogcritics.org with our musical interlude. And Mr. Josh Hathaway, are you there with us, sir?
I am here, Sean. How are you doing tonight?
Thank you. Thank you for coming to the program. It's hosted by the leader of the liberal pack of media people.
Boy, I didn't know that Russia was still where they were hoarding all the communists, but okay.
They want me to go. I lead the pack of liberals. I'm not getting paid like I lead the pack of liberals. I don't know. But anyway, welcome back to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me back. Glad to be here.
No problem. And first of all, you want to mention now, it's been a couple weeks, been a while since. When were you last on?
Wow, I think it was back in late February or something like that. It's been a few weeks since
really?
I've been back.
All right, and then you want to talk about BC Radio?
Yeah, I figure, you know, I will pimp my latest project.
There you go.
I've talked about my own podcast that is sort of mothballing right now because Blog Critics has launched its own weekly podcast program.
Uh-oh.
And because they couldn't find anyone qualified, I'm actually hosting it.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, so we've done four episodes. We've done four weekly programs, and we are in production on episode 5.
Wow, very good, very good.
Yes, yes. Everybody go over to blogcritics.org and check out what we're doing on BC Radio. Having a good time with it. We're still in our infancy, kind of figuring things out, but... you know, I think we're in the process of building something, so we're really enjoying that.
Well, absolutely. Welcome back to the world of podcasting. And now, first of all, you want to talk about the Sopranos Season 6.
Absolutely. I am loving Season 6 in spite of the dream sequences, which normally I am violently opposed to. I think we have had two great episodes and one... pretty solid episode 3 weeks into this. I don't know how closely you keep up with the show. You keeping up with it this season?
No, I'm sorry. I don't get HBO.
Well, probably be careful because right now in my apartment complex, I'm accidentally getting HBO free. I'm
Ooh.
Sure that, you know, this is going to get shut down and I jinxed myself. Season 5 was the first season I was actually able to keep up with it week to week. The first four seasons, I had to wait for the DVD. But I'm 3 for 3 so far this season, and it's really been some very good TV.
Really? Now I do know because I watched the news, and they said that Tony Soprano was shot, last week?
Tony was shot at the very end of the first episode.
Okay.
And he spent all of episode 2 in a coma.
Uh-oh.
And it is only at the very end of episode 3 that he emerges from the coma. And the way they did that was just hilarious.
Really?
And, they've all, you know, while he's been in the coma, he's obviously in an intensive care ward. And they have generally tried to keep it family-only in there. And, obviously, the Soprano family, you know, there's the immediate family, and then there's the business family.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with Tony kind of on the out for an indefinite period of time, the other family members have all been sort of in a bit of a... they've all been trying to fill the power vacuum, and so Paulie finally talks Meadow, Paulie Walnuts talks Meadow into allowing him to have a few minutes to visit Tony in his comatose state in the room. And Paulie starts yammering on. And Paulie has always kind of annoyed Tony, even though he has been largely a good mobster. Mm-hmm. And Paulie starts talking about having been kicked in the groin and having had to have an MRI on it, and how he's starting to feel old now, how his muscles are drooping, and he used an analogy that even on internet radio I won't repeat. But as he's doing this, the monitor on the comatose Tony Soprano starts beeping up, and he starts going into the red. Paulie, even in a coma, Paulie is able to get Tony's blood pressure to rise.
Really?
And they flash the dream sequence that Tony has been in while he's been in the coma. He's playing almost this other character, and he's trapped in an unnamed city in a hotel that he can't get out of. So as you see Paulie, you know, yammering on, annoying Tony, and his blood pressure rising, they flash to Tony in the dream sequence, and you see him pounding on the hotel room, where you can hear somebody very loud on the other side of his hotel room, and Tony's banging on that wall, you know, begging that guy to please shut the hell up. And it was just, it's really well done. And then Tony does emerge from the coma, and season six is off to a great start. Three episodes in, I just can't believe that the show is going to have to come to an end.
Yeah, now this is the last season of it, supposedly, right?
Well, actually, the way I understand it is they're going to do about a 12-episode run now, and there's going to be about 7 or 8 bonus episodes that are supposed to air, I believe, in January.
Really?
So there were, before season 6 started, there are about 20 episodes left in the program, and we've now seen 3 of them.
Huh. So, because, I've been reading, like, oh, this is going to be, but they'll be it there, right? When they get done with those bonus episodes, they'll be it for the series?
Yeah, that is my understanding. Huh. Now, every once in a while, they have hinted that, you know, David Chase has hinted that this might not be it, but I think everyone basically believed that when those final 8 episodes air, that the show really will end.
Well, it's a very popular show because I work at one of the casinos here in Las Vegas, and we get people. The hotel doesn't have HBO. Most of the hotels don't have HBO. They people calling down looking for, are you showing Sopranos anywhere in the hotel? You know, no, we're not. But you know, call after call after call, and you can't find a place in town just having a viewing party or anything like that. So I mean, it's amazing the popularity of the show, and it's on pay TV. You know.
Yeah, it is amazing. You know, like I said, I haven't had HBO most of my life. And I actually, you know, through word of mouth, I heard that people were really getting into it. I borrowed season 1 from a friend of mine, and I've now bought all 5 seasons that are available on DVD. But, yeah, this has really revitalized HBO. And, you know, now HBO has gone on to do a lot of other series that have become really popular.
Yeah.
And, you know, they kind of had to because DVDs and the influx of the rental market, it was getting kind of a tough sell to get people to pay whatever it is a month to watch 6-month-old movies. And the original programming, I think, has been good for them. They've been doing some great work. And I've always been a big mob movie fan.
Oh, yeah.
For my money, Sopranos is about as you know, good as they are. And you know, look, all those folks looking for Soprano Listening Party, if you bring over the beer and such, you can come watch it with me.
Yeah, I mean, all those shows that had anything to do with the mob have generally been pretty successful. We had, of course, on TV, CBS had The Last Don. They aired two miniseries of that with Danny Aiello and Jason Gedrick. And then he had, years ago, he had Ken Wall's show, The Wise Guy. That was extremely popular until Wall got hurt and he had to leave the series. But, I mean, it's amazing.
And more often than not, that was a pretty good show. I remember that one too. And let's see, NBC's got the show Las Vegas, which I don't think is necessarily overtly mafia, but
yeah.
It's the mob. There is a fascination with it. Obviously, you know, The Godfather is the thing people will point to as really sort of showing that could be a profitable entertainment platform for entertainment companies to use, and it's only gotten bigger from there with the Scorsese movies and all that.
Yeah, and then also there's a some kind of game that's out, but based on The Godfather. I couldn't believe it. You got to be kidding me! They came up with a game based on the Godfather. It's and with Marlon Brando, he's in the damn video game, huh?
Yeah. Well, you know where that started is or where I think that started a little bit is there's a video game called Max Payne, and there was a video game called Hitman, and so a couple of game companies kind of started mining that territory just a little bit, and somebody said, you know, well, hell, The Godfather is one of the best, mob properties out there, and got the rights to do it, and before Marlon Brando passed away, they did actually get him to do some voice work for the game, stuff that, you know, wasn't in the movies.
Amazing.
And I think so far it's been a pretty hot seller. And
amazing.
It just, once again, goes to show just how popular the mob platform is in the entertainment community.
Yeah, and then, and also Desperate Housewives is coming out with a game, too. So it's like, what in the hell are they doing?
God.
You know, and then also you want to talk about, there's some upcoming CD releases. What do you want to take? You got Live?
Yeah, actually, I'm a little bit excited about that because today I got an advanced copy and I will be writing a review of that for Blog Critics. So when I started to put together what I wanted to talk about tonight, I didn't have it, and I've gotten to listen to about half of it with the wife to whom I am married, who is actually a bigger Live fan than I am, and we've gotten to listen to about 5 or 6 songs. There were 3 that we've really liked so far, and there were 2 that were a little bit terrible. But Live's got an album coming out in May, and I'll be review of that up on the site here pretty soon.
Very good. Also got Pearl Jam's got a new CD out.
Yeah, and Pearl Jam once again showing that, you know, they can be annoying sometimes in the way they go about things, but they're really always sort of on, they attempt to be on the cutting edge in terms of getting their music out to the fans. They released the first single to their new album. It's going to be self-titled. They released it on their website for free. We're allowing people to download it. Al Barger, who is one of our BC writers and one of our resident characters, has written a review of it. He's not crazy about the single. I haven't heard it yet, but I'm also going to be doing a review of that one for the site, and I believe that it's coming out in May as well as Live. But Pearl Jam, they've said it's not an overtly political album, but they've said that this one's going to be a little bit harder than their last. And so they're going to be releasing, I believe this is album number 7 or 8
wow.
for them, and it's also their first on a new label. Same with Live, first on a new label.
Amazing. Oh, actually, a question for the chat room. Do you have an update about that sex video with the Kid Rock and what the hell's his name from?
Scott Stapp.
Yeah.
The last I heard is that Scott Stapp has finally gotten around to filing a lawsuit. Celebrity sex tapes, there's getting to be so damn many of them out there, but my understanding is that it is still in a state of legal limbo, and they're trying to block it from being released. I think both Kid Rock and Scott Stapp have lawsuits on it. And, of course, Kid Rock kind of blasted Scott Stapp over the whole thing because Kid Rock said that Scott Stapp was actually in possession of the now infamous tape, and that basically Scott Stapp lost it, and basically told him, you ought to have taken better care of that.
A sex tape has done wonders for Paris Hilton's career, and it torpedoed the Rob Lowe's career for a while, though. But I guess it's a mixed bag there with these sex tapes.
Yeah, it hasn't been good for R. Kelly's career either.
That's right. He had the underage kids, right? Is that it?
Allegedly,
yes. Alabama gets sued, but allegedly underage.
I'm looking out for you here.
Yeah, and then also we want to talk about the Red Hot Chili Peppers have got a CD coming out, right?
Yes. I've written a little bit about this, previewing it for the site. It's going to be a double album, which is always sort of a dicey proposition. because it's not uncommon for an artist to think that they've got, you know, 30 classic songs only to find out that, you know, only about 9 of them are any good. But the Chili Peppers, it's the weirdest thing, just real quick on them, listening to some of their early, you know, their mid, late 80s, early 90s stuff when they were doing sort of that funk rock sort of thing. I never would have expected that in their later years they would try to become latter-day Beach Boys, and I never expected them to do it as well as they have. I didn't think that they would age gracefully, but I think their last couple of records have really been excellent, and I'm a little bit nervous about this being a double CD, but I think that they've done some good work in their latter career, so I'm really looking forward to hearing that album.
Really? And then, of course, The Boss, he's got to come out with new CD. We played a musicals tribute to him between the 2 hours, so he's got, was his like a best of or something?
No. Unfortunately, I'm a big Springsteen guy, so let me say that out front before the hate mail starts. I'm not real excited. He's doing a covers album. And not only is he doing a covers album, it's going to be a cover of Pete Seeger, just Pete Seeger songs. Pete Seeger was a great folk musician. And, you know, Bruce Springsteen is arguably one of the top 5, top 10 songwriters in rock music history. You know, I want lesser talents to do covers albums so that you can get them to do some, you know, halfway decent material, but you know, I mean, what's next? You know, a Bob Dylan covers record? Nobody wants to hear Bob Dylan doing covers. He writes great songs.
And yeah.
I kind of feel the same way about Springsteen. Now, he may do it very well. I haven't heard the album. I will buy it, but it's just not what I want him to be doing. I don't mind him doing acoustic folk music type music. I think he does that extremely well. I'd just rather hear songs that he writes, because I think he's still one of our great songwriters.
Yeah. And actually, another question, do you have any Desperate Housewives news? I think I had some Desperate Housewives news. No.
The wife to whom I'm married can hear me, so I have to be careful about talking about Desperate Housewives.
I know Kyle MacLachlan, he's going to be on there for like a 4-episode arc coming up. I don't think I brought that with me. And then also somebody else is going on. They're playing a new lover for Eva Longoria's character. Sean O'Mac is going to be... No, I'm going to be the new gardener on Desperate Housewives.
Hey, let's start the rumors. You know, I'm here to help you. If I
absolutely
can get to that role, I'll do what I can.
Well, since I'm leader of the liberal media, I might as well become the new gardener on Desperate Housewives. And, you know, that's...
You know what? Yeah.
That's on... They shoot that on the Warner lot. You know, the only house that they can't show on that lot is the... because the Munsters' house is right in that row of houses. They have to shoot around the Munsters' house on that lot there. I don't know. That's a bit, little secret there. Kyle MacLachlan, here we go. Kyle MacLachlan going to be in a multi-episode stint in Desperate Housewives next month, April. And then Jared Leto will be on 4 episodes as Eva Longoria's new lover on Desperate. So his career is taking a fall if he's going on a series, especially Desperate Housewives, you know?
Well, you know, he's going to do a little 4-episode thing during Sweeps. You know, we've seen other, you know, Bruce Willis did a cameo on Friends, for example. Julia Roberts did a cameo for her then-boyfriend Benjamin Bratt on Law & Order.
Oh, yeah.
My guess is it's not necessarily a signal that his career's taking a fall, but more just that he would be an attractive, sweet-type cameo actor.
Really? And actually, Scully Girl's asking, have you got any news about Lost?
Well, this is going to be one of my great pop culture sins that I have to admit.
Uh-oh.
I have actually never seen an episode of Lost.
Oh,
so,
no.
Scully Girl, my apologies. Ah. Please, no hate mail.
And she's asking who Kyle MacLachlan is. Actually, Kyle MacLachlan, wait a minute, he was in that Dune movie years ago with Patrick Stewart, and he was also in Twin Peaks, and then is he in some kind of law show right now? Is he on something?
Yeah.
Injustice.
Yeah, it's on ABC.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of it. I remember it was based around trying to free innocent people on prison.
Yeah.
I don't know how well it did initially in the ratings, but Dune's probably what most people remember.
Yeah, and then I also want to talk about Pernice Roberts. Pernell Roberts. Trevor John MD update. Do you don't have a Trevor John MD update, do you? Now,
no,
Pernice
no,
Brothers.
I don't think there's anything more to say about Trapper John, M.D.
They're making a movie. They're remaking Trapper John. It's going to be a woman. Trapper John's going to be a drag queen. A Gonzo. I don't know. But no, no. Pernice Brothers.
Pernice Brothers.
Yes.
Yeah. This is fun for me because this is one of my indie snobbery bands. Actually, Joe Pernice, he's the only artist on his own label, and he's recorded under about 37 different names, mainly the Pernice Brothers, and he's working on a new album, and I also saw on a message board that he's going to be making, speaking of cameos, see, it all comes together, he's going to be making a cameo on Gilmore Girls. They've actually used one of his songs in one of their episodes. And Pernice Brothers are working on a new album, and they're a really great pop, alternative pop band. Pop sounds, really intelligent, insightful lyrics, and, you know, people talk about there's nothing good being recorded these days. If you don't have at least three Pernice Brothers CDs in your collection, you owe it to yourself to go buy them, and Yours, Mine, and Ours is my favorite for those of you who are looking for a listening guide.
Wow, and then also King Kong is coming to DVD near you. When is that?
It came out, I guess, today.
Oh.
Yeah, it came out today, and so it's finally out there, and I didn't like it. The wife to whom I'm married did, so yeah, we'll be buying a copy of that this week. And Peter Jackson has done some interviews to promote that and has said, you know, both Lord of the Rings and King Kong were lifelong ambitions for him in terms of films he wanted to make. He's made both of them, and he's really excited about where to go next. He and his wife are actually working on a screenplay for his next film. It's based on a novel. It's Something Bones, and I can't remember the name of it, but it's going to be very different. This is not going to be one of those that's going to have Andy Serkis in some sort of stop motion suit. This is going to be more of a drama piece with still the opportunity for some interesting visual effects. But King Kong, it didn't do as well as people thought it would do in the theater, but it was still a moneymaker. It still did well with a lot of critics. It was nominated for Oscars in the technical field, and it makes its rounds to DVD.
Really? Well, because it cost how much? Millions of dollars, and then he had to go into his own pocket to finish the movie the way he wanted it to be finished, right?
He did, and I think the big problem that King Kong faced is, well, first of all, he stole Steven Spielberg's dinosaurs, and I'm sure he's going to hear from Spielberg on that.
Uh-oh.
But I think the big problem that he had was sort of the expectation buzz. Everybody expected it to be massive, and instead it was just big, if you will. And so I think a lot of people dismissed it a little bit just because it didn't wipe up the competition quite as fully as people expected, but it did still make money, just not to the tune people thought it might, and it didn't dominate the Oscars the way the three Lord of the Rings films seemed to do. And so I think, you know, look, I didn't like it. I don't look forward to watching it again, but I think, in fairness to it, I think some people were a little bit hard on the film. I think they had some unreasonable expectations going in, and I think it was done in by its own expectations.
Really? Well, with that, Josh, we'll let you go.
Sean, I had a lot of fun. I appreciate you having me back on the program.
Thank you very much. Give the listeners one more plug about the podcast.
Yes, it's BC Radio. You can find it at blogcritics.org, and check it out. We have some of the guests who are on your program also do stints on BC Radio, so we have a lot of fun with it.
Well, thank you very much for being on the program.
Thanks a lot, Sean. I had a lot of fun.
Have a good night now. Thank you very much.
You too. Thanks.
And that was Josh Hathaway of blogcritics.org with our pop culture discussion. Very informative. I kind of, my eyes kind of glazed over about the music part, but all you listen to is talk radio. I'm sorry, but it was very interesting, and I like the King Kong bit and everything. I still haven't seen that movie, but in just a minute or so.
It's a waste of time.
Yeah, we'll be joined by Koenig Rules with our Doctor Who, Battlestar Galactica, and all that review. And before he comes on, now we'll get some entertainment news. The Nielsen Top 10, 60 Minutes. We landed in the top 10 for the first time in ages, and most of that is due to an interview with Tiger Woods by Ed Bradley. Where else? The top 10 shows from the networks was American Idol on Tuesday, followed by American Idol Wednesday, and then Desperate Housewives was third, CSI Miami was fourth, and then 60 Minutes, and then Deal or No Deal Monday, Two and a Half Men, Lost, Unanimous, must be a new show on Fox, and also The Unit finish off the top 10 shows from Nielsen from last week. And there's this new show, I think it sounds like it's kind of cool, going to be on the Discovery Channel, called Cash Cab. It's a reality game show where people plop themselves in the back of a seemingly normal yellow van taxi, but then the lights go on the ceiling, begin flashing, and the driver turns around to inform the passengers that are on TV. En route to the contestant's destination, comedian Ben Bailey asked general knowledge questions worth $25, $50, or $100. That sounds like that show is on Spike, where that guy was walking around and just asking, you know, nonchalant questions, and all of a sudden he said, goes, oh, you're here, you want $100. That sounds like it's like a different spin on that type of show. But anyway, it's called Cash Cab. It's going to be airing twice on Discovery Channel, 6 and 6:30 Eastern Time. So it's also a kind of a ripoff of a British original, and this Cash Cab has been licensed in 25 countries. So that sounds like interesting. I like to watch that. And Simon Cowell goes for Variety with a new TV show. Simon Cowell's new TV talent show promises to be a real circus. Singers, comedians, jugglers, animal acts, and anyone else hungry for stardom will be welcome on America's Got Talent, a summertime series that Cowell, the tart-tongued judge on Fox's American Idol, is producing for NBC. So, and also Patricia Heaton from Everybody Loves Raymond is going to be doing a, she's coming with her own show. It's like a different spin on The View, and it's going to be a syndicated show. They're going to try and air that in between The View and Live as Regis and Kelly. And also we had that thing about Kyle MacLachlan and Jared Leto are all going to be on Desperate Housewives. So I think with that, we'll bring on Koenig Rules with our... And Mr. Koenig Rules. Oh, hold on. Here comes the TARDIS. We're going to drop him off. Koenig, welcome, welcome off the TARDIS. How are you doing?
Hey, hey, I like the theme song. You got the new theme song?
Absolutely, thanks to Darth Marley. He's not so bad after all.
No, he's okay, even though he doesn't like Katie all that much. You know?
Well, I don't like her anymore either, because I read here in the chat room that she's got a boyfriend that plays football for Kansas City Chiefs. So, oh well.
That's so much, he's playing, right?
So much for her. I'll have to move on to Grace Park now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the TARDIS dropped you off right in time, too. We like that. Very good.
Yes.
So, and now what did you think of the Unquiet Dead? I thought it was an outstanding episode.
It was. They like to do a couple period pieces on Doctor Who from time to time, and this is the one for this last season, and mm-hmm. they're going to do about two or three for this new year. So, mm-hmm. But I really liked it with Charles Dickens and everything, and, you know, dressing up Rose. In the period, it mm-hmm. reminded me of a Tom Baker one with Leela. Do you
yes.
remember those?
Yes,
with
yes.
With Leela the Barbarian, where they dressed her up to the talons of yeah. Wang Chiang.
Yeah.
So it reminded me of that. It was good. It really was. And
she looks hotter every week, doesn't she?
What is that?
She looks hotter every week, Rose.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, she's probably one of the hottest assistants he's had.
Absolutely.
You know? Yes, yes. Did you catch the reference to Bad Wolf?
No. Somebody else said that, too. I'm like, yeah. What? I have to go back and watch it. Where
the psychic, was... when she was talking to Rose, sensed Bad Wolf with her. And that is a recurring theme
that's going to be in a lot of these other episodes that lead up to the finale.
Oh, well, I thought the whole thing was done very well. You know, they opened it with the in the mortuary and all that with the grandson. I guess it's the grandson. The grandson's there to bury his grandmother. I guess it was, and she reaches up and, you know, strangles him and kills him.
That's right. Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah. And then it's amazing. And then it gave you a hint at the beginning of the show how big the TARDIS is, because the way the doctor was saying, you had to go, you know, down three doors to your left, up and down and right. I'm like, holy cow, that thing's huge.
It's huge.
Yeah, I think the Cylons are aborted somewhere, haven't they? But, I mean, it was, and then the effects are amazing on this show.
Yeah, they said that the CG effects, that they have done so much with CG within the last 5 or 10 years that they can really make Doctor Who big budget. The one that's coming up, you're going to be impressed when
really?
The spaceship crashes into Big Ben.
Uh-oh.
And then lands in the Thames. I mean, it is like, I can't believe no other sci-fi show, including Battlestar, does such nice visuals as Doctor Who. I mean, this, it was so cheesy, if I recall, with the old show, and this new one is anything but.
Yeah, they're really broken the budgets on the series. I hope it keeps up. I hope this is just, you know.
Oh, it does. It does. I mean, this is just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
You're going to see spaceships, the whole mess.
Really? Know? And now I got the ratings for The Unquiet Dead. Apparently it did a 1.27 rating.
Wow.
Unquiet. It slipped a little bit. The Unquiet Dead last Friday on its first run in America compared to last week's episode. The last episode was up, the latest episode. Yeah, but it was down in total viewers, apparently, in the rating, but it was actually up in the demographics. It was up 13% with men ages 18 to 49 and up 12% with total viewers ages 18 to 40, but was down approximately 20% on its household rating.
Wow. So it's up. Those that said it was going to surpass Battlestar in the ratings, I don't think that's happening.
Yeah.
But I think as a substitute for it during its off time, I think it's doing okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's airing with reruns of the other shows. I think
that's right. I still think remove this stuff from Stargate. You know, I mean, remove Doctor Who from Stargate. But I have a feeling if you do that, the Stargates are going to flounder in the ratings. You heard the latest, didn't you, that Richard Dean Anderson is coming back to do some guest starring roles on SG-1 and Stargate Atlantis.
What? He's going to be on both shows? Wow.
Yeah, I guess Richard Dean Anderson can't get any jobs now that he's out of Stargate.
Well, he's doing some Budweiser commercial now, isn't he?
Yeah.
Playing MacGyver? He's going back to that.
It tastes pretty well, right?
Yeah, well, they must think they need the ratings, because I'm sure he doesn't come cheap. You know?
Right.
Wow.
But they also realized, too, I was talking to the one who answered the phone. What's his name?
The Cylon.
Yeah, what's his name?
The Cylon.
Yeah, the Cylon.
That's right.
Khan's the Cylon.
That's right. I was telling him that.
I'm waiting for, you know, MacGyver has done as much as he can.
Yeah.
On this earth, I'm waiting for, like, Doctor Who MacGyver.
Well, what about Doctor Who and his sonic screwdriver? You know?
I mean, obviously they must think that the ratings need the help. And then also I got this from the Mirror in the UK. Apparently the upcoming series of Doctor Who, the second season, apparently it's going to have another arrangement of the theme. So what we're hearing right now is not going to be the theme come the second season.
The music.
Yeah, the music's going to change it.
It's going to be like the original theme song because they had an expanded part of it that they don't have in the new one. But I heard the newest theme song, and it's got all the elements of the old one, but updated.
Really?
So it's cool.
And then actually the chat wants us to get back to the episode. Now, well, they landed. The doctor thought it was 1860, but actually it was Cardiff on Christmas Eve, 1869 instead.
Right. And then,
of course, Charles Dickens was there. I thought that was nice.
Yes.
And then,
Charlie.
Are they going to toy with that throughout the season? Like, why his timer was off?
Yeah.
Oh, the TARDIS is notorious for landing, the box in all sorts of wrong periods.
Really?
So, yeah, the TARDIS isn't a good time machine, but it's a sentient one.
Yeah.
You know, it's alive.
Yeah, so it's like a Cylon.
Right.
Yeah, and then in the middle of Dickens reading, Mrs. Peace reanimates again and releases the ghosts into the theater, and that's when the doctor says, it's about time or something like that, or that's more like it or something like that, and they go charging towards the theater, and they hear all the screams.
Right.
And then, what's his name? The funeral home director, Sneed, he chloroforms Rose and takes her back to the funeral home.
Yep.
Where she's almost killed by the grandmother and the grandson because they come to life and, you know, they come after her.
That's right.
Yeah, and then I thought the whole exchange between the doctor and Dickens was pretty cool in the coach.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm your number one fan.
Yeah, he goes, what's that? How do you make me cool? that humor kind of reminded me of the Star Trek the one where they went to Earth, went back in time.
The voyage home.
Yeah, the voyage home. It was kind of that kind of humor. I thought that was very good. And what else? And then that scene with Rose and Gwyneth in the kitchen where it was in the pantry. I thought that was very, very good.
Right, where she's talking about where the future, she's picking up on Rose's mind and can see the future with airplanes and stuff like that. That was cool.
Yeah, the flying metal boxes, she called them.
Right.
And then the metal box, a lot of noise and everything. So I thought that was amazing. And then
that's where she picked up on later on the Bad Wolf reference to Rose.
And then the doctor decides they're going to have a seance to get the Gelts to come out, right?
Yep. The nice aliens, right?
Yeah. That's when the doctor and Rose get into an argument because Rose is showing more of her humanity side, where the doctor really isn't in touch with his humanity, right?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Because she wants
to really see that she's alien, whereas Rose is more concerned about her race and, she didn't like even the dead being used.
Yeah, yeah.
By the creatures.
Yeah, and then they hinted, because the Gelf was talking about that their race was decimated by the Time Wars.
Yes, yes, the Time War, which was very instrumental because that's where Doctor Who's people died.
Mm-hmm.
The Time Lords died in the Time War.
Yes.
And the Time War had to do with the Time Lords versus the Daleks.
Oh.
So the Daleks are going to be. You got a Dalek effect there?
I don't know. We got the Daleks. Centurion. No Daleks?
Jeez.
No. Con. The Daleks in the room? I don't know. I haven't seen them yet. They might show up. But anyway, they had this. The Gelfs want to reclaim the dead bodies here on Earth to exist in physical form. And then the doctor convinces Gwyneth to step into that awning where that thing is there.
That arch.
Yeah. Uh-oh.
What?
There's the Gelfs. They're the Gelfs. Oh, no, they're the Daleks. What am I talking about? They're the Daleks. There they are. It does sound like a duck. Uh-oh. Uh-oh. Wow. There they are. Now, I don't know if are those sound effects from the new Daleks or from the old ones? What do you think?
The new
ones sound a lot like the old one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It sounded like a duck possessed by Satan.
And then And then at the end, she says she can contain them, because Dickens comes back and says you got to exterminate the flame and let the gas come out, natural gas. And then she says she can contain them, and then she tells Rose to leave because it's her decision, or so she thinks. That line I thought was interesting because she goes, "Oh, you're just saying it because you think I'm stupid," you know. That was kind of, I'm like, well, it's amazing. And then she takes out the match, and then the doctor feels like she's been she's been dead for about 5 minutes. He says to Rose afterwards. And I just thought the whole episode was it's good at Doctor Who. You get an escape, you know.
Right. And if you've noticed, they focus on at least one death in each episode. The tree lady, whoever she was in The End of the World, she died, and then the psychic died in this episode to make it more drama. So it's not entirely kiddie oriented because they really focus on at least a secondary character always dying.
Oh yeah, I mean,
yeah.
Well, especially when you have the woman coming out of her casket. I mean, you can't, you know, expect kids to sit through that. You know, I mean, that was pretty, you know.
Yeah, when I first saw that, I figured this is Doctor Who.
Mm.
You know, I mean, it's sort of like it reminded me of the start of a horror film.
Yeah,
But then it changed to sci-fi by the end that these were actually aliens, not ghosts, or you know what I mean.
Yeah,
so,
and then the woman's, you know, the old lady screaming before they started the theme music and everything. I thought that was pretty cool too.
Yeah, with the white face, white pasty face, and then the stuff going out of her into the gas lamps. That was cool.
Yeah, and the whole attention to detail they did on this episode was amazing. You know, first you got the sets at the studio there with the carriages and the little village and all that, and then they did the whole thing in the theater with the Charles Dickens sitting in his dressing room like regrets because he's alone on Christmas. I thought that was a nice touch too. And then, you know, the poster behind him. I mean, it boggles the mind that comparing this to the old show with the detail that they're going into on this series.
Yeah.
You know, and then the whole thing with the TARDIS. Yeah, they did the whole, like, a crash landed on there because they started the episode with them laying on the floor of the TARDIS.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then now next week it's the invasion of London or something. What's the episode called?
Is it World War III? No. That's the second part. It's a two-parter.
Okay.
So you got so don't be surprised by the end that it's a cliff because they do a couple two-parters.
Really?
I'm trying to think. I'm sure someone in the chat room knows the exact title.
Yeah.
It's probably typing it down feverishly as we speak, right?
I thought it was cool getting back to this episode how they ended it with the doctor wanting to give Charles Dickens another surprise by showing him how the TARDIS disappears.
Right, because he was going to die in a matter of days or weeks.
Yeah.
Right?
And
he reminded me of Scrooge at the end of Christmas Carol when he saw Happy at the end and, you know, bless you, you know, Merry Christmas.
Yeah. I mean, I like this series. I mean, a lot of people are saying, oh, it's a big letdown from Galactica. I mean, for crying out loud, I mean, you can't have, you know, Doctor Who be just like Galactica.
Is nothing like Galactica.
Yeah.
Well, like I was saying to Sean, it's going to be hard for the American audience. It's going to take maybe a little bit of time for the American audience to kind of humble to the... Because, look, a lot of the times they're probably going to land in England. They're not going to land like in the Civil War in the U.S.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, they're not going to land during, you know, maybe the migration of the West back in the...
Right.
You know,
exactly.
You're not going to have that because it's an English show.
Yeah,
right.
the British viewers would be furious if they show them landing in Cleveland, you know, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame or something. I mean, what the hell is this? You know, this is our show, not an American show.
Though,
you know.
The doctor was there at the time of Kennedy being assassinated.
Uh-oh, that's
remember?
Right. Yeah.
Remember
yeah.
in the first episode? Yeah.
Yeah, he was there for all this stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
And then actually, Invincible is saying that this was actually shot almost nearly all on location, the Unquiet Dead.
Cool.
And then the Aliens of London is the next the title.
Aliens
the next,
of London,
the alien.
And then it's, I believe, World War III, which is the second part. Yeah.
And
this is a spoof of... If you remember
yes,
with the lizards assuming human form,
yeah.
it's a fantastic spoof. You know?
Really?
Be prepared for farts, though.
Uh-oh. You're kidding me.
I mean that, literally. Be prepared for farts.
That's good.
what is this, like Tremors 3 /
Ass
Blasters?
You're going to be amazed at the effects
really?
In this next one. If you thought... The Unquiet Dead
really?
Had great effects. This one, it surpasses anything that's been shown.
Well, that's good. Actually, Invincible are saying that they will actually land in Utah in one episode. Brother John Smith? Is they going to bump into him there? Or?
Yeah, that's
the
with the Dalek.
Oh, the Dalek episode. Wow.
Yeah, that comes on after the two-parter.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Oh, you said the magic word. Here comes the Dalek. It's outstanding. Uh-oh, it's the... And I understand they're still shooting the second season. Now, actually, somebody
yeah,
else...
I think that, I think they're wrapping it up now, and they're going to start showing it in April.
Really? And I hope I get some of these, some of these stars on the show. I don't know how that's going to be possible. They all live in the U.K., but because they haven't started shooting Torchwood yet. Is that correct? They haven't, started yet?
Right, they're going to do that in summer, and then it's going to air, I believe, in October.
Yeah, and then...
hopefully Sci-Fi will pick it up.
Oh, I hope so.
That would be good if Battlestar aired.
Exactly.
Doctor Who, then Battlestar, then Torchwood.
Oh, really?
I don't think... some of the Torchwood episodes might be available by the time Galactica would be airing its next, final episode. Mm. So.
Well, you don't think they'd put Torchwood on before Galactica?
Well, Torchwood is supposed to be a very adult-oriented one, so my guess is they've got some things that are probably even more off-color than Galactica, though I do hear that in the Galactica Season 2.5 DVD set, that this is what I've heard that they go through with raping Sharon.
Oh, kidding me.
The Pegasus episode. So we really saw a watered-down version of what they really intended.
Hey, Sean, did you go for that part?
Yeah,
no?
I was up there on location for that scene. I was the stunt double for the Admiral.
You were right behind me.
I was behind her all the way.
Sean was a fluffer.
I'm behind Val, sorry. I'm behind Grace Park all the way. But she is a boomer, that's for sure.
Speaking of Battlestar,
what? You got some news? Okay.
Well, first, I still don't understand why the Chief beat the crap out of Callie. That is really... And I know he was dreaming, but that was really a disturbing scene.
Really? I think he
was... I was more disturbed by that than what was happening with Sharon on the Pegasus.
Yeah,
I think
he really wanted to die, and he was upset that Kelly woke him up.
He beat the crap out of her, and it's like he wasn't even aware. It was intense. But anyway, with the Battlestar news, it is going to be taking place, as I said last week, 3 to 4 months later. And there are going to be some very incidental characters dying in the first episode. Very incidental. But there's also a secondary player that will probably die.
Oh, no.
But I am not at liberty to reveal the name.
Oh, no. Is somebody that's been on the show since it started?
Sort of. I mean, it definitely an individual from the first season.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Ron Morris said this isn't going to be homogenized series. People are going to die. It's reality. You know, I almost expect him to kill off somebody from the main cast.
It's very strange that they haven't gone through with that yet, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
But they are going to be explaining, according to, and I've been keeping up with the news, they are going to be explaining why Lee got so fat.
Really?
They are going to explain that. They are going to explain why Starbuck and Ty are now
close
friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that something else happened between Lee and Kara, too.
Ooh, really?
I mean, yeah, she's got her boyfriend and she married him, but something else happened to create a friction between them. And so there's going to be like a backstory to all these characters as to what took place during that year's time. Because some things happened that we don't know yet, but that's going to be revealed.
And, it's got to be something big to make Ty and Starbuck to become close.
Yeah. And Ty is going to have a more pivotal role, like he did at the start of Season 2. They felt that by the end of the season, he was doing basically nothing, like I told you. Mm-hmm. So they're really going to be expanding his character.
Really, that's good. That's good Ty and Starbuck are friendly. We know it's we'll get a little backstory about what happened to make those two close. Unless
right, and what happened that made Lee and Kara so odds with each other.
Yeah, unless somehow Lee and Starbuck were arguing and Ty stood up for Starbuck and defended her, or somehow they turned her around to him or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it had to be something major because Ty's always been on Starbuck's ass, sorry.
Yeah, unless maybe if there was a big wedding, maybe Ty gave her away at the wedding and wasn't Adama.
Yeah, maybe. I hope they have, you know, sort of like those flashbacks like they did with Kara and Adama's son.
Yeah. Now, Zach, and now they're going to explain why Lee is so out of shape. I mean, maybe he's been sick or something. No idea what's going to be?
I have no idea.
Huh?
Not yet. But really? I'm sure because it's not going to air till October.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of leaks. Yeah. Let's just hope that the one that leaked all of, and I'm sure you've read it too on the sci-fi board, the one that leaked the whole plot details of Lay Down Your Burdens Part 2, that was sort of like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, a person shouldn't have done that.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's because they open up a McDonald's on the Pegasus or something like that. I mean, that's why you're getting all that weight. I don't know. And then what else is going on? You know what? I finally found the Battlestar Galactica companion here in Las Vegas. Finally. But you know what?
There's going to be a new one, too, you know, for the second season coming out in summer.
Man, I'll just wait for that one then because I want to. It's $20 for that thing.
Really? Yeah. You had to pay that much?
Well, I didn't pay for it. I just read it all in the bookstore. I mean, are you kidding? I'm not
some
spending
coffee, right?
Yeah. And then now the comic book. Any news on the comic book? Everybody's asking about the comic book.
I have no idea about the comic book.
Yeah. And then Ron Morick, apparently he updated his blog 3 times in 1 day, supposedly.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, I guess he's got some time now before they start filming in April.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then they're going to have like a month interim. Supposedly around July, August, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But that was not his decision. He said on one of the blogs that wasn't his decision to start up in October. That was Sci-Fi's decision.
Really?
To start up. But that gives him more post-production time, so the episodes at least are not necessarily going to be rushed.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to help maintain stronger quality stories that if they have some extra time.
Yeah, now Darth Marley is saying it is no good to kill off secondary characters while Kara is guaranteed to live until the end.
I think Kara's going to live just because Ron Moore knows of Darth Marley's comments, so he's going to deliberately make her, persist throughout the whole show.
You know,
to irritate Darth Marley.
Yeah, unless something happens and she quits the show or gets fired, I think she's on to the bitter end.
That's right. That's right.
And I still say that she's the real prophet from the gods, not Laura. I think that's a misnomer.
Well, I'm telling you what Laura's done. I was talking to my colleague, because we're going to be doing a Battlestar Galactica conference in 2 weeks in Atlanta, Georgia, and I was talking to her about Rosalind's transformation. I mean, where she is really corrupt. I mean, you know, trying to fix an election and trying to kill the Cylon baby. I mean, I don't feel so much sorry for her as I used to. You know?
No. Well, she's becoming more hard edged and
she really is. Now, that might make her a good leader, but that might also make her a bitch.
Yeah, you know? Well, you think the death of Billy would have made her, you know, rediscover her humanity a little bit, but obviously it's not. It made her even more harder edged.
And that's why I'm thinking, following through what you said, I don't think she's the one that's going to lead them to Earth. I mean, I see a person a little bit more compassionate, and I just see Kara as more compassionate than the president at this point.
Exactly.
All she wants to do is just throw every Cylon
out an airlock,
you know?
Yeah, I think because she every once in a while they show you her taking out those little figures and, Lords of Kobol, hear our prayer. So I think she's the real prophet. I think they'll reveal that probably towards the end.
That's